Welcome to PDX Bluescast. Show number 26 is coming up. Greetings and welcome to PDX Bluescast. My name is Pat McDougall. I'm your host for this musical podcast in which we celebrate the best blues music originating from Portland, Oregon and the surrounding area. This is show number 26, and I'm delighted to be here. Thanks to everybody who is a returning listener, and welcome to new listeners. It's great to have you here. And you've come for a special show this week. I hope this is a treat. I'm convinced it will be a treat, in fact, because for this show we have a special guest, and it is my brother.
It is?
Okay, he is my brother, Steve McDougall, here in town from all the way up north, Victoria, B.C., and Steve's really probably the person who actually turned me on to the blues, and he has an encyclopedic knowledge of the genre and jazz as well and others, is a musician himself, and we'll probably touch on that more a little later, but he plays blues harp and little sax now and again. And so, Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Pat.
Okay, thank you for being here. Steve's down here for, let's just say family stuff and leave it at that.
Close enough.
Yeah, but I guess there's been some silver lining to the visit. A visit from Steve is always a good thing. On top of that, though, we did discover shortly after his arrival that, oh, gee, look, it's Tuesday night. And
June 13th.
Who would have thought it's June 13th? And by gosh, isn't there a Curtis Salgado benefit or something
over at the...
poster
or something
I'd
online.
Be a shame not to...
I'm here.
It's right. Like, he's here.
Not much else going on.
He likes Curtis.
Have some.
I like Curtis. And who else is...
Well, there's that Cray guy that you
see. Yes, that Cray fellow.
And Mr. Mahal.
Only Taj Mahal, really.
And, there's Steve Miller,
Steve Miller, yep. Little Charlie and the Nightcats.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite an evening. So yes, to cut to the chase, we did manage to take that in. And I told all of you last week that I was going to be there.
Yeah, that was your final excuse.
That's the other reason.
I told my listeners.
I told everybody I'd be there, and I knew they'd be looking for me. And thanks, everybody, for looking for me.
Did you find him?
did anybody find me? I don't know. There's that one guy that sort of stepped over me, and I think he was maybe a listener looking for me. So it was okay that he spilled his beer. It was not a big deal. What do we say about that night? If there was a downside, it was only that we, because of various scheduling.
Yeah, logistics.
Yeah, we missed the first set. Who was that? Oh, well.
We didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't realize he was going to kick it off, and it was Curtis, and so it's a little embarrassing that we missed Curtis's set.
Well, the funny thing was that, most reasonable thing we could figure from that was, well, in his weakened state, they're going to go easy on him, and or at least right. get what he's got in him for the night, get it out there on the first set. So, thinking nonetheless, he probably laid it all out, and poor guy is probably spent. Yeah. If we're lucky, there's, some talk of an all-star jam near the end of the show.
Maybe he'll
materialize.
Right, right.
And at least make a token, appearance, maybe even... puff a couple notes on the harp.
It turned out to be
not
a fair bit more than that.
It did.
That we heard from Curtis.
It did. All right. Shall we continue on that?
Good Lord. I know people are, anybody who wasn't there, they're on the edge of their seat over this.
Well, we can't have that.
So we had,
Well, yeah, for me, any night seeing Little Charlie and the Nightcats with Rick Estrin on harp, and is not a night to be sneezed at. Guy is one of the very top guys on the West Coast. And they're a great band with a distinctive you know, style that they've been faithful to and developed nicely.
Jump blues kind of swing.
Yeah. You know, well, anyway, you know them or you don't, but, you know, great guitar, even a jazzy, you know, like you said, jump, but a jazzy feel, certainly in Charlie's guitar playing.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that was a nice way to get into it. And
Now, favorite, Little Charlie and the Nightcats. Okay, first Curtis, of course, which we missed. Yes. Then it was Little Charlie and the Nightcats. We caught most of their set. They were followed now, of course, by slight cognitive shift there.
Oh, that's why I had the cognitive shift. Yeah,
that's right. It was ever clear, folks.
Yeah.
And it was cool. Art Alexakis, you know, a fellow Portlander, came out to do his part for Curtis. It was, you know, kind of a... a head-jerking thing to have the rock and roll come out. But they did all right.
Well, they did great.
Yeah.
You know,
that was... And it was Art's different. I mean, Everclear used to be just a three-piece with Art and then a bassist and a drummer. Now, those two original guys are gone, and so Art has assembled, was it a five-piece total?
Yep, there were five.
It was five.
Five of them.
Yeah. So he had a keyboard player for one thing, That added some dimension to the thing, and it was an all right set.
It was fine, and so then there was a break. I guess that's the point at which we learned we had missed Curtis.
But, we asked the guy. Yeah. I think he was a Bluescast listener, but and he said, "I love your show." And Curtis, and, Curtis was the
but,
first set.
Yeah,
I said, "Yeah, thanks." So after intermission, it was Taj, I guess. Yeah.
It was Taj Mahal and the Phantom Blues Band, which had me already wetting my
something. You were drooling.
I was drooling. That was happening, and lived up to certainly my expectations. Oh, expectations. He was in top form.
He was
amazing, and he had an awesome band and.
Yeah,
real great song selection. We don't need to get into it.
It was stuff, but I can't help but mention Mike Finnegan on keyboards. One of my favorite.
Isn't that guy that
who we saw with Etta James a couple blues festivals ago? And he's one of my absolute favorite B3 players.
One of your B3 guys.
Well, he just makes the instrument sing. And I should mention that that B3 on stage that night. Belonged to Lewis Payne of Paul DeLay's band formerly, and King Louie and Baby James and all that other stuff. And Lewis was kind enough to donate the use of his organ for the night. He couldn't be there.
He was an organ donor, in fact.
Very nicely done.
Thank you.
If I had a rim shot, we'd throw it in.
There'll be no more of those.
Yeah, no, you know, bring them out. But and that organ is named Esmeralda. There's a bit of trivia for you.
Okay.
Maybe that'll be a later show. We'll do a trivia question, and you'll have to have listened to this show. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Mike Finnegan was fantastic.
Yep.
That was Taj's set. I mean, it feels like we're slighting him to not say more. But anyway, it was stupendous. It was.
You know, I've seen him before. I've seen him in smaller groups. I've seen him solo, and I, you know, I've loved the guy from the first Taj Mahal album.
Yeah.
In the late '60s, but. But this, this was, I can't imagine seeing him in better form or shape and being more bang on and everything that he's about.
And then he came to Portland.
For Curtis.
For Curtis, which is just huge.
And he addressed that. So that was great. And that was not the last we would hear of Taj, but
correct.
More on that later. But
yeah.
And then it was... Robert Cray,
if
I'm not mistaken. And
Robert Cray and band.
And that, again, was, for me, there was all kinds of stuff wrapped up in that because I've always been a fan of his, especially his guitar playing and his singing.
He's a great singer, my gosh.
But he's got such an immediately identifiable guitar sound and style.
Yeah.
And that, for me, goes back to when I... lived in Portland in the late 70s and managed the lamented Django Records, actually.
Yes, that's right. I wanted to make sure we mentioned that.
And
so, many of you probably saw Steve on a regular basis if you hung out at Django's.
Yeah, might have. But at that time, one of my favorite weekend or evening entertainments was to catch the Robert Cray Band when they were in town. Yeah. They were either usually in Eugene or somewhere on the coast, and quite often in town. And personally, being a harp player myself, one of the favorite things about it was this harp player vocalist they had, who, well, was Curtis Salgado. And he was, you know, he shared the frontman duties. I mean, that's all it was. It was between the two of them. And I don't know. It was just, those were some amazing nights. I used to just keep thinking, this band should have national attention. They're that good. They can't get any better, than this, because it's modern, it's contemporary. And one of the best things about Cray for me has always been, and he's pushed this envelope a few times for me, but, I'm not a blues purist, although I know what I like.
Okay, yeah.
But anyway, I like any kind of music that explores the creative possibilities with still some respect to the form itself.
Yeah.
And a thing that Cray has pushed is with his lyrics, with his songwriting, because they are blues songs, but he writes pretty non-traditional blues songs, put it that way. And at times to me, they're a stretch. I think, but most of the time, they're not. Most of the time, he's written some great, great songs. So I hadn't seen him in, I don't know, maybe 10 years, I guess.
Okay.
Certainly long since Curtis was no longer part of, the whole, when he was touring all, Strong Persuader and all those, all those strong albums that did so well.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see him, but of course it also immediately brought back memories of and of course it was perfect with him and Curtis. And I wasn't sure, and I remember we wondered if Richard Cousins, or I did, if Richard Cousins was around or not. And
yeah.
Didn't seem that he was. More on that later.
Yeah, right,
But, so there was a bit, not sentimental, but just, it was evocative. It was more historic for the nature of the, given the nature of the evening itself. And it was an electrifying set.
There was the tune, the ballad, which I hope I'm correct in thinking it's called Time Makes Two.
Right, which I thought, dumb song. But I did.
Right.
I thought, this is a dumb song. How can they pop? He said, now we're going to get funky, and he starts with this song.
Yeah.
And I thought, we're getting dippy here. It's like it, you
right.
know.
Right. It started very low key, and and I almost felt, you could say it's my imagination, but I almost felt the people in attendance just getting a little restless, that they were looking for, a straight ahead shuffle, something, and he wasn't delivering that, and but the way he built the intensity of that tune,
it built,
by the end, good God,
you couldn't
it was
funky.
Yeah, it was. And Jimmy Pugh on the organ, for the most part organ, some little piano from him. Hayes, I can't remember the drummer's first name. His last name is Hayes. I feel very bad about that. And on bass, Carl Severide. But
I want to say Louis Hayes, but I don't suppose that.
Well, no.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'll embarrass myself if I try. But
I can do it because I'm from Canada.
That's right. Canadians embarrass themselves all the time.
That's right.
Well, I think we have some Canadian listeners, actually, so I better watch it. Including you. All right, so Robert's set, yes, was just flat out amazing, and again the fact that he came out for his buddy, you could feel that, and I liked the fact that he never, if I recall correctly, he never came out and made a big statement or a sentimentalist.
No.
He just played the music and let that
did what he was there to do, and did
very
it
cool,
extremely well,
and indeed. And so at that point, it was time for Steve Miller.
And they introduced
Steve Miller. It was sort of Steve Miller with the Curtis Salgado All-Star Band or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
So that Steve Miller came out, big old horn section, including Warren Rand on sax, and other, I guess, the trumpet and sax from Taj's band, whose names I don't know. But even people beyond that, because you had five or six horns on stage. Bobby Torres was up playing percussion for a lot of the evening, and we had two drummers out there. So it was.
Were they both there? I guess they were by then.
Yeah, because Cray's. Oh, I think I'm right about that, but good question. Yeah, But so it was
a kick-ass band.
It was indeed. Dave Fleshner on organ, and then Janice Scroggins came out to play piano. I'm sure I'm forgetting people, and of course Curtis's band was there. Jacob on guitar, and then the bass player and drummer are new guys, and I don't have their names in front of me, but they're very good. And so Steve Miller did his thing. He did some straight ahead blues, some Freddie King, and
the thing about Steve Miller, yeah. I don't know, is again I'm dating myself, but I first heard him, you know, the Children of the Future album, you know, in 1967, I guess it was, and it was solid blues. That's what it was. It was blues with a kind of a San Francisco or a little bit twisted touch to it, but it was blues. And I think Boz Scaggs was in the band at that time. Yeah. And he was, you know, I liked his singing, and he was a pretty awesome guitar player.
Right.
And subsequent couple of albums became a little bit more psychedelic, but still good with a lot of meat on, you know, and a really distinctive sound. And I don't need to go on. But the thing is that he tried my patience in the following decades.
Jet airliner.
Yeah, you know, and he was recycling some of that stuff, but he was making pots of money. Thing is, I could not let go of my, you know, it didn't really matter because I still knew he was a great guitar player with a distinctive voice and stuff. But what was really neat was, actually, I guess it was last year at the Blues Festival, was seeing his, you know, has the capacity to be humble. I mean, which is, you know, he can play the rocks. He doesn't play the rock star. Let's put it that way. He wears that beat up old thing that might have been a fedora at one
hard
time.
Hard to say what that hat is.
Ever was. But,
it's really hard.
But it is not. Yeah. It is not the vision of a rock star anyway. Right. And he was wearing it Tuesday night. But the thing is that he came out and it just he launched right into. He acknowledged, Freddie King and he went right into. Tore down, I believe it was. And he tore it down. And it was just clean as a whistle. Mm-hmm. No frills, just straight, tasty, right on.
Right.
As was almost all the set. I mean, he did at one point get into Fly Like an Eagle. And, you know, I imagine Pat and I, for our various curmudgeonly reasons, each inwardly groaned.
There's a bit of groaning.
But he redeemed. I mean, not that he has to redeem himself for these two, but whatever. He even elevated that pretty much to the same level because he used everything that was there on stage, including the congas. And no, but they were good. They belonged.
Yeah, they did.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We're getting into our.
But it was a fresh arrangement of that tune.
You know what?
Like you said.
It was fine. And he's Steve Miller. He's got to do a crowd pleaser, sort of. You know what I mean? I mean, sure, that was basically a blues crowd, but it definitely picked up the crowd more.
Yeah.
And
there's,
you know, the more familiar, you know, Steve Miller, but done really well. And his playing and his singing and the whole thing, and that worked as well.
Yep.
So it was basically a barn burner of a set.
It was indeed. It was really something.
In every way. I mean, almost like all the sets really were, you know, left. A pretty enthusiastic audience, you know, getting ready.
We didn't really mention crowd response, but folks were just getting into it.
It was a full house, by the way, pretty darn full. I mean, and those $250 seats down front were not nothing.
Them seats looked all right
from where we were.
Anyway, my press passes did not come through for that. I think it was just a glitch.
Hint.
Yeah, no. Exactly, to somebody.
Yeah.
You know what else? Oh, Alan Hager was up there, too.
Well, that's why I couldn't remember if he came out at that point or not. And I believe he did. Okay,
I think he was out for Steve's set because they did...
Is that where he did the slide thing?
Yeah, he did that slide break, and now I can't remember the song. Somebody's filling in the blank for me, probably. I think that was during Steve's set.
I think you're right.
Yeah, Curtis actually introduced Alan after the fact, sort of apologized for not having mentioned him while he was on stage. But Alan's been a friend to the show, and we definitely want to acknowledge him.
His slide break was
himself.
It was electrifying. Who's that? That's not Steve Miller. God,
that was big. Yes, the Steve Miller set ended, and then there was kind of a transition, not a huge one, but
Judy Belushi came out.
Oh, that's right. Judy Belushi came out and said a few words.
One of the things she said, by the way, I guess we can say, it was that the Curtis's treatments that he's been getting, and I can't remember if they're all chemo or all radiation or a combination of the two,
right,
had reduced his tumor to a size now that it made him eligible to go on the list for for a transplant. So
that is big.
That's hugely big.
Yeah, and now it makes, I mean, you know, now the money is needed more than ever, and it's going to really start eating into his resources. And
I'm remembering we might want to edit this part. No, we won't. But we're after Judy and the other guy walked off the stage, I said, "Pat, who was that guy?"
That's right. That's right. Your contacts were,
I don't know what the deal was. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's what it was. Anyway, that Sheep had been explaining a lot of that stuff with Curtis.
It was standing. Curtis. It was actually Curtis.
But I hadn't seen him in a year. But and
right,
it was just something wrong with my contacts. Anyway, yeah, he, it wasn't, I wasn't even projecting, oh, he's ill or anything. He just didn't look
the way I sort of. It was partly what he was wearing.
I think that shirt was pretty loose and billowy. Yeah. So we better continue.
So we move on to the jam, a part of the evening, which I guess it's worth mentioning that on the website for this show, the end time had been specifically noted as being 11:15. By now, I think it was 11:30 or something.
I don't think it was quite.
Oh, not
there
yet.
Was a I think it was even, I may be wrong, a little bit before 11. So technically,
there's still a chance it would be a really quick jam for the last thing, and then that would be it. But no, that's not what ended up happening. We had just
it just went
a bounty of music, really.
Yeah.
I think to start the jam, they were bringing out people, switching out musicians here and there, but at one point Curtis said, I'm looking for Richard Cousins.
Yeah,
as you had mentioned. And
do we need to say that he was for years Robert Cray's bass player, but he was also, and then that goes back to the band with Zelgato in it. So
right.
I mean, I remember his fresh young face at that time.
You bet.
And his energy and stuff. But it didn't look so
good. It didn't look so good. He wasn't showing.
He was not. It was, you know.
There were multiple announcements on the mic, you know.
And the really guys were standing around. They weren't going to start without a bass player. And they,
right,
I guess they couldn't really think of a sub at that point, or didn't want to, or knew something we didn't know.
It was just a little bit of dead time.
He may have been otherwise disposed. We
he
don't
may have
know.
Been. Yeah.
Evidently he it's was. Doesn't matter.
To say. But eventually, finally, he came bounding out.
Literally.
In bare feet. As is his trademark, and dreads, which is different from the early look.
Last time I saw him,
but. Yeah, and he and thank God he came out, not because it was going to be lackluster otherwise, but he brought an energy to the stage for that jam. That there's one tune that was, like many tunes, was an open jam, you know, in a repeating progression, and so the song had kind of reached its logical conclusion, but it was clear that nobody knew for sure how it was going to end. He ended the song by running at the two drummers, by running with the exact hit that he wanted to happen, and they followed him. I mean, it was amazing to me.
I think there were other parts, it looked like, where he was directing that. Almost
very much.
Stuff had been worked out. I mean, Curtis was doing a lot of...
Curtis was, that's right.
Conducting, but...
And also remarkably for me anyway, Richard's back was to us for most of that set. He was just focusing on the two drummers and just being a rhythm section. And that really impressed me.
At the same time, there was the original Cray band, but that was just only... Well, you know, mostly the original Cray band.
Right.
And that was only not a small part of what was going on there. I mean, good Lord. Certainly in time, Steve Miller was out there. I guess he wasn't out there at the very start.
Right.
But, and, you know, Alan Hager was there.
Yes.
And there was Janice Scroggins and...
Eventually Curtis brought out Mike Finnegan.
Yes.
And Mike Finnegan sang a tune.
Yes.
They sang the You're Gonna Make Me Cry, which I've played Duffy Bishop's version of that on the show.
That's right. You have.
Fairly positive I have. And this was killer.
It tore the house down.
It did. In the clouds, anyway.
Yeah.
During the theater
of the
clouds.
It was really, really. Yeah. Yes. In the theater of the clouds. It was amazing. Now I'm wanting to jump ahead to a certain part. I feel like I'm forgetting something. Yes.
There it is.
Goodness. Here it is.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
now, just, you know, over the years, and like I say, going back to the very, to the early days of the Cray band, I really have been a really major Curtis fan. Every time I've come to Portland over the last couple of decades, I've made sure I caught a Curtis show if there was one. And I've, you know, got all his CDs and stuff. But the thing is, my thing is, and I know it's, you know, I'm a harp player. All right. But I really think he is one of the best harp players in the world. Okay.
He's
pretty distinctive style. And he's not flashy. He's just got the goods. So anyway, as his career developed after he left the Cray band and the good and bad stuff that happened after that, once he got clean and sober and started his real solo career, he more and more began to develop, you know, his persona or whatever identity as a singer. And I've been so begrudging of that. What's he doing singing? He thinks he's a soul singer. Where's the harp? And there has been less and less harp. I mean, this is kind of a non-issue, really, but there's been less harp on subsequent albums. There's always some, and it's usually killer, and he's done side things. And, you know, live, of course, you get some, although not as much as Steve would care for, but there's always enough to make, you know, he certainly hasn't lost it. He's just, you know, and I've had to just say, okay, he really is a great singer. He really is a soulful guy.
Sure, yeah.
And he has every right to develop this part of himself. I'm just a little disappointed. And so, and you know, the first part of the jam thing was him singing soulfully,
yes,
and letting
right.
other people sing, but
right.
but really getting into it a lot. And you know, there'd be times he'd take himself to the back side of the stage, whatever. Now, I'm not sure the exact, I won't say chronology, I just did, but of this, but maybe 3/4 of the way through what proved to be a pretty darn long jam. Anyway, Rick Astron came out in the middle of some major song and, you know, quickly conferred with, I don't remember who, maybe Cousins or a couple people back in the back part of the mix. And they indicated, he should play some, it'd be okay for him that harp would fit in this song. And I mean, he's a pretty amazing player, so he can make it fit just about anywhere he darn well chooses. So he did. He played he just almost revived this one. Not that it was lagging, but he breathed even further fire into the song.
Kicked it up.
Did a thing. And then they started another song. This is my recollection, and it's colored a bit by my bias for Curtis, much as I like Rick Astron. But anyway, they started another song, and Astron had the harp and mic in his hand, was ready to solo. Curtis turned, and, well, he took the harp out of his hand. And I don't think to that point he had played much, if any, harp. He might have played a little, and it was tasty.
Right.
But to me, again, you know, ever the sentimentalist or whatever, and not so much. At this point, it was obvious this guy is not going anywhere anytime soon. He's not leaving us anytime soon. The energy that he was putting into the vocals.
I did.
It was pretty clear.
It's so true.
It wasn't a token thing, and all my fantasies about what the first set might have been about were right out the window by that time.
Yeah.
However, there was even more when he took the harp and started soloing. It was as if it was like a statement. And it wasn't an in-your-face Rick Astron statement.
No.
Really, it wasn't. I mean, because Astron was totally enthused with it.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know, maybe it was in-your-face everybody. This is, you know, I am Curtis Salgado. I can do this.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And he just, he went several choruses beyond where, I mean, I don't mean where he needed to, but I mean it was where it was totally satisfying.
Yeah,
he just kept it going and changing it and just developing it into one of the best harp solos I've ever heard, period. And that's some kind of statement, but he really did take it out there. And he wasn't even done at that point.
No.
Now, maybe then, Pat, maybe it was like 12:15, and we're thinking,
maybe.
I don't know, this is pretty good.
And we were starting to laugh at the 11:15 thing and like, you know, how much longer could this go and how much longer would the people at the Rose Garden allow it to go? Yeah. And that was apparently a non-issue.
I guess Curtis kept saying, well, what do you say? This is a jam.
Yeah. He just looked
call
out of the
your
crowd.
Mama. You're not
going to. That's right. He said, call your parents, call your mama. You're not going home.
You're not going home. I mean, okay, so he's going to do another song.
Yeah.
And that wasn't quite the case because they didn't unplug him. And unlike my experience with Jimi Hendrix in 67 when he in Portland, but anyway, where they did unplug him at the 11 o'clock curfew.
Ouch. Okay.
But anyway, they didn't unplug him and they kept going and there was always a new thing happening, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, always new, you know, combinations of things and shifts in the energy, but always good shifts.
Yeah.
None of the shifts included or involved Curtis's energy level diminishing.
No, so, like,
he kept
getting
more inspired and fired up. And, I mean, gosh, it was a tribute to him for one thing.
Sure,
and that would be pretty amazing. So then we come to the part, I don't know if we're fast-forwarding here, but we come to a part when it's maybe 1:15 or 1 a.m. anyway.
I think it's about 1 a.m.
1 a.m. And finally, you know, not that the audience is pretty, they've had a big experience. So
yes, they
could contemplate going home at this point.
And some people have gone home,
a few,
by the
not
way.
Very many, though. There were a few. I mean, they probably had to work the next day.
Yeah. But Terry, our listener, has already admitted he went home early.
Okay. Well,
it's all right, Terry.
It's okay, Terry.
Yeah, we'll just tell you what he missed.
Yeah. So Curtis, at this point, I don't remember exactly the scenario, but he began to acknowledge his thanks for everything that had happened, right? Now, okay, just before that, I guess we weren't cheating to say, in the song or whatever before that, probably the song that had preceded that point.
Yeah.
He said, I'm hoping Taj Mahal, I can get Taj Mahal out here. Taj Mahal, it'd be good.
Yeah.
But there was no Taj to be seen. So anyway, so he goes, finishes the song, which was another great song. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
And everybody was there and Steve Miller and Alan Hager, not to be forgotten, because he was
still contributing
very much there.
Big time, yeah.
And anyway, then, so Curtis does a very eloquent, you know, appreciation of the evening and, you know, that none of these guys made a dime for this. Everybody gave and gave and you gave and community and all this stuff. And
so he was clearly winding it down.
He was winding it down. And I mean, people were looking at their programs and their seats. And I think they were sort of glancing at the exits.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And then who comes out? Okay, here comes Taj Mahal.
Stepping out onto the stage.
Curtis doesn't see him, right?
Right.
And he's actually, I think guys are starting to even pick up gear. Mm-hmm. And somebody taps Curtis on the shoulder and he looks and there's Taj Mahal. And Curtis, I think, looked kind of befuddled in my take on it in that moment.
Yeah.
And Taj shrugs and starts walking off the stage.
It was great. It's great. Just does this understated shrug. Yeah. Hey, you don't want me. I'm gone. Oh, God.
But he didn't go.
Called him back.
Called him back. And I don't know, they do two more numbers?
Three,
I think it was three.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, at the end of the third one, and, you know, he was in every bit the form he'd been in during a set, except in a way, with that kind of talent on the stage, you know, that combination of forces and energies to get cosmic on. But, I mean, he was absolutely effervescent.
He was
just fizzing and sizzling right to the very, so by the end of the, I guess it would have been the third tune with Taj, and I mean, believe me, it wasn't just all Taj by any means. Everybody was still as much, you know. Robert Cray was burning to the end.
One of those solos.
And they, you know, and it wasn't about, there was no star stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
No star stuff, nobody, not
no
Steve
really
Miller, you know, you, I mean. It was, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so then it finally was over.
1:20, something like that. 1:20 a.m. And
that was it.
Wow.
So it was a good night,
Pat. Oh, it was an all-right night. You know, and regrets, we never got a program.
Yeah.
So
I was checking the trash cans
I
was following people hoping they'd drop their programs.
Pretending this was not my brother in the trash can.
I'm sorry.
I almost did it too, because so anybody
didn't
who's got
seem like it was unreasonable.
No. It looked like a reasonable place.
Some of those women, I mean, you know, where were they going to wind up? Where were those programs going to be the next morning? They were going to be lying in the bottom of their. Okay, what is it with the women? Okay,
what's that?
I was okay. Touche.
Here come the letters.
All right,
but
some
yes,
of those guys.
We wanted a program. Is the upshot, and if you've got a spare one, why, you know, get it over to
even
us.
If
we'd
you
love
are
to see
a
it.
Woman,
we don't mind.
No,
that's fine.
If you can forgive that,
it's my brother. He's Canadian.
I know.
And I did want to mention one thing really quickly is that I thought it was interesting, and if you want to get schmaltzy, it was borderline touching, that in the audience that night.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the proceedings, and so I'm you know, okay, I'm taking a leap, but I'm guessing that that meant this was a paying, ticket holder who came to the show. In the audience, not up on stage joining in for, you know, for whatever reason, was Paul DeLay.
Yeah.
And I thought that was awfully cool.
Yeah.
It was great to see him supporting Curtis, and of course, you know, of course he would. My impression of Paul is just as a really good guy, good genuine guy, and so that was cool. I saw other musicians there as well. And other folks I knew, it was just great to see people coming out and supporting.
I think Paul caught a good show.
I think Paul probably had reason to money's worth.
I think so.
Yeah, no question. Well, and so, you know, that this has been a lot of talk, and we should probably, you know, season it, leaven it with just a little music.
A token gesture.
And who better to take us into a little blues excursion here than Curtis himself? And so I don't know my brother Steve, you know, I don't know him like a book, but I do know that one of his favorite CDs, one of his favorite Curtis CDs, is the one that he did with Terry Robb called Hit It and Quit It. And so I thought, Steve, we'd have you choose a favorite track from this one that we would...
Certainly. Yeah, it's a cool album because I don't think it was nationally distributed like his other stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not aware. I really only became aware of it through you, Pat. But
right.
And it came at a point in my life where I certainly needed some cheering up, and I remember it very well for that reason. But also because it's like it was really refreshing to hear because it was kind of, in a way, you know, with my... No, it wasn't a throwback. It was more like an embodiment of what I really like about Curtis best.
There you go, right.
And which was that it's not quite an acoustic... In fact, you couldn't call it an acoustic album. There's certainly an emphasis on the acoustic. Yeah. And Terry Robb is a huge, huge part of it. That's why he's co-billed. But as a vehicle for... to me, it's Curtis Delgado at his best because he's certainly singing on it. And,
yes, he is.
And there's not harp on every song. But, there certainly is on the title track, which is Hit It and Quit It, which is a great workout for both of them.
Yeah.
But so.
We must be getting close to the music now.
If asked to pick a favorite or most representative track, maybe from all the things that are best about this CD, which I hope is still available, people can still buy it.
I think so. I think you can get it at Music Millennium, in fact.
I would recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Folks pick it up.
Oh, no question.
But anyway, it's he does two Muddy Waters tunes on the album, and, you know, Curtis can do Muddy Waters.
Yeah, he can.
And he does Too Young to Know, and the good news is that we're going to hear it.
Hey!
With harp. Good harp, great vocals by Curtis Delgado, and awesome, and I don't use that word lightly, even after all that talk about the Jam.
Yeah.
Very, very great guitar playing by Terry Robb.
Okay, good. Well, here we go with Curtis Delgado, Terry Robb from Hit It and Quit It. This is Too Young to Know.
Well, you know, I done got a bad voice. Now my mind is running down. I believe I'll pack my suitcase and cut on out of this town. The girls say, let them leave. Oh, girls say, y'all too young to know. So deep in love with a man, just can't stand to see him go. My ticket, boys. Now my trunk's already gone. You can tell by that I won't even be here long. To the girls, say, let them leave. Poor girls say, y'all too young to know. Can't stand to see him go. Mm-hmm. nothing, boys, to be laughing about. Well, you know, I once had a good situation, but now I'm busted out. To the girls, say, let them leave. Poor girls say you're too young to know. Can't stand to see him go.
Curtis Salgado and Terry Robb with Too Young to Know from their Hit It and Quit It CD, and one very well worth picking up. And we'll have links in the show notes to where you can get your very own copy. Highly recommended by myself and, of course, by... The Canadian guy. And he's already made it clear how much he likes that.
Have I? The CD. Yes, not the being Canadian. Not being, or accused of being a Canadian.
We're not even going to talk about that.
Okay. Well, actually, we are, but...
Oh, I forgot.
A little bit.
Yes. Oops, that's all right. So, with the Tuesday night Curtis Salgado spectacular.
That was big.
It was big. It left us almost satiated.
And it was a very nice counterpoint to the family stuff.
Exactly, it was. Release the pressure valves a little bit. But we felt that, we weren't quite done with our musical therapy for the week.
Well, little did we know.
Well,
exactly, anyway.
Right, no, yeah.
The thing is that when I come to town,
yeah,
Pat and I usually, it would be almost silly for us not to play some music together.
We'd just be plain silly.
That's something that we usually manage to work in, of course.
You bet.
And it was sort of out there that we would probably do that again.
Yeah, and then we thought, well, why should it just be us? Maybe there's a venue of sorts where we could actually hook up with some skilled musicians. And I must say that in the past, Stu Kinzel and Lynn Ann Hyde, when hosting the jam over at Beale Street Northwest, were kind enough to let us participate. And so that popped into my head. I thought, gee, they're still doing their Thursday night thing. I got in touch with Lynn Ann Thursday during the day. Let her know Steve was in town. I was interested, and she said, come on down. And, I have to admit, I'm not positive that format there is still, in fact, an open jam. And
well, there was nobody else there.
That's another subject.
Yes.
But, be that as it may, Lynn Ann was just kind and generous and very solicitous, wanted us to come out and join in the fun, and we couldn't say no to that. And so just last night, in fact, we headed out over to Beale Street Northwest with all our gear and looking forward to it, and with good reason. It was a great, great night.
It was a great, great night. I'm just thinking, all our gear, all your gear.
Okay. the harp player over here.
You don't have much gear.
The keyboard player over here. And
but,
yes.
But yeah. We digress. But,
yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. The for me, my experience was that, the opening set was Stu and Lynn Ann, and without a bass player, as it happened. Do we need to add that?
Yeah, we should, because Boyd's a buddy of mine, and we'll rake him over the coals for not having been there.
Hey, Boyd.
Boyd. But we did have Bill McLean on drums doing a great job.
Really good. Yeah. And so, I'm sitting there thinking,
That's a song.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. It was almost a year ago the last time I was here.
Yeah.
And I've been playing harp for, almost 40 bloody years. But,
good,
and I've been, a pretty good harp player. People have thought of me that
obviously
way.
Obviously, since you were 2 years old is when you started.
Right. Anyway, but, I also have known that I've been sort of coasting over a good chunk of that time. And so always had the sense that I could play better. Anyway, in the last year, I really have applied myself. And so I've somehow or other gotten to another level as a player. That's not a big deal. It doesn't mean I'm anywhere. It just means that it's nice to know that you can still grow at this advanced age. But anyway, I think of Lynn Ann Hyde. I actually have a lot of thoughts about her, but they're good thoughts.
Okay.
And I had the feeling that last year I did okay of playing with, and she, basically what happened was I played with her on some tunes on most of a set, I think, right, is how it was, and they had the full band, I guess.
Yeah,
and
they did. Yeah.
Anyway, so last night those guys opened, and I knew that I would be playing better this time. That was okay. This isn't a big... I'm getting too personal here. But anyway...
That's all right.
That's okay. It's the personal touch.
It is, yeah.
But anyway, so she... to me, to my ear, it was like... She was almost like she was playing extra. And I think that's not paranoia on my part. But I was very impressed with her playing. Let's put it that way. It seemed
good.
Like she certainly... It was not by any means a full house, if we can say that.
Good God.
What's the deal there? But
come
anyway...
Come on, people.
Yeah.
Okay.
They got that. But it didn't. And of course, she's a professional. But she played. She played a lot, very well. She played hard. Yeah. She played stuff that she didn't have to play. It still would have been great. I don't mean material. I mean licks. I mean stuff that she was laying on there. And you know, I'm thinking. At one point, I thought, I know I'm an okay player. I know what I can do. But what's the point of me getting up there playing with Stu Kinzel when she could be? Because I'd almost rather listen to her than play, you know? And, I mean, much as I would like to play, and much as it was not, I kept thinking, oh, yeah, but you're going to play with Pat. That's right.
There's that, too. Yeah.
Who, by the way, is a pretty tasty, is an amazing keyboard player. But anyway, that's good backstroking here. But anyway, so they concluded the set. It was great. And, I don't know. Then, so Pat was set up already, and so we went up and did a song with Lynn Ann, I mean, with both of us playing harp,
right,
which actually went pretty well.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was good.
It was cool to hear you both.
And then she got off the blinking stage. That's a Canadian expression.
Thanks.
And which was, you know, I had a great time, and I was happy with my plan, and everybody seemed to have a good time.
You bet. Oh, yeah.
Stu Kinzel, well, he knew what to do.
Oh, you know, yeah, one of the best guitarists in this town.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that gets recognized enough. The guy can play whatever he wants to.
Yeah.
And he was playing electric last night. He actually played both I think it was a Strat, but also a Telecaster. Yeah. Oh, no, it was a Gibson. That's right.
It started with a Gibson.
Yeah, and then you switched to a Telecaster that a buddy had brought. And it sounded fantastic on everything. The guy knows tone. He just...
He has such taste.
And,
I mean, you know, he's a pretty darn good singer.
And
knows his material. I mean, he knows the material.
Right, yeah.
Now, you know, so that was great. But that brings me to... another point, you know, is, and I don't know, it's about Lynn Ann Hyde. Like, how can I get into this? She's, you know, she's very charming, like her presentation, like her stage thing and stuff. A lot of it's kind of aw shucks and self-effacing, a little
right.
bit, you know. I mean, anybody that knows harp is going to know that that's kind of irrelevant because she's actually a really good harp player.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I consider myself somebody who knows, you know, who's listened to a lot of harmonica over the years, and I really actually, and so here is the situation. It's kind of awkward to be at a jam where you've been invited to sit in, for me it is anyway, and say, by the way, I think you're one of the greatest harp players walking, because it sounds like you're fawning or brown whatever nosing.
Yeah,
so I didn't want to do that, you know, so I'm doing it now.
I
really think that she really is, just because you mentioned, you used the word underappreciated.
Yeah.
I think she's underappreciated. I mean, I think she's underappreciated. And to a degree, I know she knows how good she is because she gives lessons and stuff like that, but... I don't know. I think in some ways that she may not realize how good she really is compared to other players.
Could be.
Because, I really think that.
Yeah, okay.
Because she does stuff, you know, like she has great ideas. She, you know, she knows the material. She's very faithful, all that. But to my ear, she takes it to another level in terms of tone and stuff that only the really good harp players do.
Right.
She is a master, mistress, whatever, of tone, and you know, she doesn't do it gratuitously. She just does it tastefully, and she sticks it in where it belongs. And I really, really respect her playing for that. And so, you know, that's a level that I'm not at, and you know, I aspire to. But anyway, she's there, and I think she's really a a treasure in this town and
agreed.
And would be anywhere else.
And so, that brings me to, if I may,
yes.
Just we've made passing mentions of the fact that it was, you know, almost an empty house.
Yeah.
And
that blew me away.
Yeah. This, folks, this is real music being made here.
Yeah.
This is the real stuff, and these folks know what they're doing, and they're pulling stuff. You know, it's what do you want to do next? And they pull something out of their hats.
How about that Cajun thing? Or
yeah, how did that Cajun? You know, and it's not. You were talking about a jam that you attend from time to time. It's like, well, we could do "Got My Mojo Working,"
or
we could do, you know, there's three songs. These guys, they're going to the, you know, the real rich stuff that you don't just hear, you know, at the drop of a hat. And it's quality playing. I can't say that enough. And there need to be more people there. Listening to this and taking it in, there's no cover.
No,
and so all you have to pay for is the amazing quality food to be had at Beale Street Northwest. It's out of the way for
We're
some of you.
We're talking ribs,
folks.
People know that,
you know, and yeah, it's out of the way for me. I live on the west side, and it's out, you know, by the airport, but.
I don't know.
Boy,
there's a lot of you live on the east side of Portland.
A bunch
I think
of you do.
Fair to say,
and, yeah. And you know, that's not saying anything against the folks who were there. Thank you for being there. We saw a few folks there, and it was great that they were there. But boy, you know, there should be. I'm saying this because I end each show by urging you to get out and hear live music. It's not enough to listen to it recorded. These people are masters of the form, practicing it right here in your hometown. For those of you who are listening from Portland. It's unquestionable that it's something to be taken in and enjoyed.
Yeah, there's a lot of harp players and a lot of guitars in this town, but there's not a lot of duos that are as symbiotically, you know, tight as those. And that they both so know their material.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, like she and I have actually been playing harp for about the same amount of time.
Hmm.
She's a person who's applied herself, you can tell, from the get-go, pretty much. I mean,
right. She's
had a life, you know, and all that stuff, as have I. But
yeah.
I mean, she's been a lot more serious about dedicated. It's just clear in her plan. I'm done pretty much gushing about her. I do want to – there's just one other thing that kind of ties into our next track.
Okay.
And, you know, after the jam or whatever it was, after we were done playing.
Yes.
There was, you know, some – kibitzing and stuff back and forth,
right.
And you know, talking, you know, gossip and technical stuff and all that. But anyway, so at some point she steers it around to, well, why do you live in Canada anyway?
That's right. Why do you live in Canada?
You know, I don't know. I mean, and I made me think. Sometimes I have to think about why I live in Canada because I am from Portland. But anyway.
Yeah.
We're talking late 60s here, Vietnam era, but not really. No, I got my pardon. It's okay. No.
Your address is what?
Anyway, so that was, you know, sort of funny and some kidding around. And then I guess later I had sort of an afterthought. I said, well, you know, there's not really that many harp players in Canada anyway. I guess I like it because I can, you know, I can play. You know, I don't have as much competition.
Whatever. Yeah,
just kidding. And she said, well, no, there's what's his name? Harp Dog Brown, who I personally have. And she said Carlos Del Junco, who I didn't realize, I actually, being Canadian, didn't realize the guy's from Montreal. Now, he's sort of come into my radar in the last couple of years as you know, because he has a pretty amazing live show, which I've missed, but I've heard CDs of his live performance. You know, he's a real technician. He's super clean and all that. And he's an extreme technician. He's got precision, you know, on a diatonic harmonica that I don't know how he does what he, anyway, whatever he does, that's what he does. If I had a criticism of it, or it just would be that it's not so much to my style. I like it a little funkier, a little dirtier, a little more like Lin-Ann actually plays.
Mm-hmm.
And, however, one of his signature tunes in his live shows is, a Little Walter tune that Little Walter first recorded anyway, called Just Your Fool, which is a great harmonica workout, which we're going to get to. And the only thing I'm going to interject between now and then is, as we were leaving, I thought I had the perfect kiss off to her, and I hollered up at her, you know why I don't live in, you know why I, how does that go in? You know why I live in Canada? Because you don't. Which sounded like a perfect, you know, put down. Everybody thought it was funny. She gave me the evil eye.
Yes, she did. Yeah.
And but you know, Lin-Ann, if you're listening, the point, that really wasn't what I meant. I meant because you're not there for me to have to worry about, you know,
there
because
is.
You're where you belong in Portland, and you know, I can aspire to apply myself as you have. But anyway, Just Your Fool is a great tune. It's deceptively simple, like a lot of things are, but I guess more to the point is, you know, listen to the way these guys play, and I think it's a perfect illustration of what we're talking about.
Exactly, yeah. So we're going to listen to Kinsale and Hyde doing Just Your Fool, and this comes from their album called Still Alive in America. Here they are.
As opposed to
Canada. Thank you, God, you had to get it in. Kinsale and Hyde.
Well, just your fool, can't help myself. I love you, baby, and no one else. I ain't lying, no use in jiving, just your fool. Well, just your fool, I must confess. I love you, baby, take your mess. I ain't lying, no use in jiving, just your fool. Happy too. Well, if you leave me for someone new, I tell you something, don't know what I do. I ain't lying, no use in jiving, just your fool.
That's Kinsale and Hyde with their version of Just Your Fool, and again, that comes from their album entitled Still Alive in America, and that CD is still available in America, and again, go to the website at www.pdxbluescast.com, have a look at the show notes, and you'll be able to find a link to where you can pick up your own copy, which you should probably do. They have a second album as well titled Oklahoma Credit Card, and you've heard some cuts from that CD also on the show. So, wonderful work. An indication of what, and that, oh, by the way, that was a live recording.
Yeah.
So that's a nice indication for you of what you can expect to hear when you go and hear Kinsale and Hyde every Thursday night for the time being, as far as I know, at the Beale Street Northwest, and other dates, as you can find on their calendar. Again, there'll be a link to their website, so you can go check their calendar. But come on, folks, go out and hear these guys.
Actually, there's that that event later in the month that.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess we're, that was, it was not remiss of me because.
Yeah, there's a fundraiser coming up on the 29th of June. We did just learn this, about this last night, and it's a fundraiser, and it's to help out Bob, the co-owner there of Beale Street Northwest. So it's on a Thursday night, so the regular night that Kinsale and Hyde play, but it's a longer schedule. It's going 6 p.m. to closing. There'll be a raffle. They're going to give away a Fender Stratocaster electric guitar.
That's cool.
There's silent auction prizes and stuff. So there's all kinds of good stuff happening. Kinsale and Hyde are going to play, and I assume other people as well, because, I don't know if they're equipped to play from 6 p.m. to close.
Don't know.
I don't know the details on
that. They invited you, Pat.
Okay. So they did. They were very nice. They invited me to play with them that night. And so if you want to see the face of PDX Blues Cast and
I don't know if you do.
No, you don't. Maybe you just want to hear the fingers of PDX Bluescast or something.
I'm more not likely. Sure
where we're going with that. But, yeah, I will be there. And you know, and I've sort of, when I mentioned I was going to be at the last CBA meeting, I invited people, you know, if you're a listener, come up and say hi. I'd love to meet you. And so here's another occasion. If you're interested, you should probably just come for the music because it's right. going to be spectacular.
And the ribs.
And the ribs. Let's not forget the ribs. And to help out Bob.
Yes.
But if you're a listener to the show, I'd love you to come and say hi. That would be cool. And man, that's right. That's the day before the Blues Festival starts.
That's what happened last time. Well, actually.
That's insane. So that's the 29th. Cool. That's Thursday. So the next night, Friday, is the... Oh, geez.
You want to warm up for the Blues Fest? I think you ought to do.
So. Everybody get out there. Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. I think, you know, that about... brings things to a close. Hard as it is to believe,
we covered some ground.
We did. I hope you folks enjoyed it. I'm biased. I always enjoy talking to Steve.
Well, we kind of have. We just don't know when to stop. That's true. So,
and by
that's
now,
your problem, people. That's, right. That's you. Of course, if you, you know,
there's a fast forward button on your media player.
There's
I'm sure.
probably an X in the upper right corner of your PC's. Anyway, never mind.
The computer.
Okay, backing off.
Yeah. But in any case, we really hope you've enjoyed it. I had a great time having Steve
here. Me too.
I
did too.
It was mutual. Good.
I haven't used the word A once. And
no, that's true, eh? You haven't. Yeah, well, good going, eh? So,
yeah.
You know, I really had been eagerly awaiting the opportunity to get Steve involved in the show. And so I'm really, really glad it happened.
It was a lot of fun, Pat.
You folks can probably count on it maybe happen again sometime soon Steve chooses to grace us with his Canadian presence down here. So I'll do my little spiel like I always do. If you want to send me feedback, suggestions, thoughts about the show, I'd love to hear from you. Go to the website at www.pdxbluescast.com. You can post a comment right there on the blog. People do that now and again, and it's fun to hear from you. You can also send email to letters@pdxbluescast.com. Or if you want to be flashy and cool and new media-like, you can leave us voicemail at our PDX Bluescast hotline. That's 206-203-3PDX. That's 206-203-3739. Leave us a voicemail. Unless you ask us not to, we may very well play it on the air. And folks, that line is sitting there. I don't know that I've gotten a single... Is it true to say? I don't know if I've gotten a single call there, so... Call, leave me a voicemail. Tell me something. Tell me something interesting. And let's see. If you are a musician and would like to have your stuff featured on the show, I would love to hear your music. And what I say to people is, if I love it, I'll play it. And so get in touch with me, letters@pdxbluescast.com. I'll let you know how to get material to me. And I'm always eager to hear new stuff. And so please do that. I guess this is the part where this is about where we wind down, and I just say I've probably stressed it enough this show, and Steve helped add some emphasis, but get out and hear some live music.
You guys are lucky in this town, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Yeah. And so we're blessed with just an incredible musical landscape.
Don't take it for granted.
Bingo, because, you know, there are venues closing, and there are musicians struggling, and
I hear disco's coming back.
Never mind. It's karaoke, you know. That's what's. Don't even get me started. So get out there and hear the music. And if you are a listener who's not in the Portland area, you know, you can sit there being green with envy about the great scene here, or you can get out in your area and hear some music. Just do that, you know. So I don't know. I think that's about it. This has been show number 26 of PDX Bluescast. We've had a special guest, Mr. Steve McDougall. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, and for now, until next week, I'll still be Pat McDougall, your host. Thank you for listening, and keep the blues alive.
Do that.